Hi, this is Ben Settle of BenSettle.com, and today I'm interviewing Matt Glogley, a self-described renegade Christian entrepreneur who shows people how to create wealth in their businesses by applying biblical concepts. Matt has appeared on TV and radio, he's a member of Dan Kennedy's Inner Circle, and he has even appeared in Dan Kennedy's Wealth Attraction for Entrepreneurs, the InfoMarketer's Newsletter, the IMA Journal, and many more. Matt, welcome, and thank you so much for being here.
Hey, Ben, I appreciate you having me on the call, man. This is great.
I have been looking forward to this for the last 2 weeks since you and I initially talked. So can you tell us about your background and then maybe even that shakeup that you recently had in your life that sort of got you on this new path?
You got it. My background is I worked in the golf business for a number of years. I used to run private country clubs. I was a turnaround expert in the golf business. I was, at one point in my life, a PGA golf professional. I never played on tour. I ran, if you've ever been to resorts or private country clubs, those are the kind of places that I ran and built. And I always had a heart and a desire to be an entrepreneur. And like most people, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and it completely changed my life. I didn't realize how miserable I was working for someone else until I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I started learning about real estate. And right about the year 2000, I started working on buying my own investment property. We were living in Baton Rouge, Louisiana at the time. My first real estate deal I did, I think I lost $60,000 cold hard cash. My second deal, I lost $30,000 cold hard cash. So you can see I was moving in the right direction. Then I decided to finally break down and invest in like a kit online. The internet was in its infancy then. And I went and I attended a Robert Allen $6,000 protege program, which really was nothing more than $6,000 to get pitched every 90 minutes. And I don't know, I spent $15,000, $20,000 on stuff. And I was off and running, man. Within 90 days, I did $90,000 worth of real estate deals, cold hard cash, into my pocket. The guy who was mentoring me, not Robert Allen, but another guy who mentored me, took me under his wing, and before I knew it, I was coaching investors. And I'm no longer actively involved in real estate. I've sold my entire portfolio, but I've been involved in over 150 real estate transactions. I've coached 2,800 real estate investors nationwide. And right at about 24 months ago, well, I got to back up a second. I started investing, and I gave my life to Christ. My whole world started getting changed. I started wanting to know really truly what does it mean to run a Christ-centered business. I grew up Catholic, but I never really understood what it meant to have a personal relationship with Christ. And so when I gave my life to the Lord, I just naturally assumed that there was a biblical way for running a business, and I could find zero resources then. There wasn't a book at the library. I mean, I went to my pastor, and I said, hey, I'm now a believer. I've given my life to the Lord. How do I go about running a Christ-centered business? I'm an entrepreneur. How do I go about doing that? And no joke, Ben, my pastor said, how about if we start with you running the bake sale? I went, what? What has that got to do? He goes, well, you know, it'd be good. We can get you on some committees. That'd be really good for you as an entrepreneur to be on some committees. I don't know about you, but my whole goal in life is to, like, get rid of committees. I've never, ever seen it. The committee's going to solve this. So I started going on this quest about what it means to run a Christ-centered business. And about 2 years ago, I had a business partner in my coaching business. We're still very good friends today. And I literally heard the Lord speak to me and say, all right, you've been talking about helping Christian entrepreneurs. It's time for you to go. And I said, God, I can't. I'm making too much money at this other coaching thing. Let me go make a lot of money, and I'll get back to you in 2 years. Well, God didn't really like that answer, and he started taking me through a 24-month period where he dwindled my business down to almost nothing until he got my attention of saying, okay, God, I guess I have no choice now but to do this working with Christian entrepreneurs. And it's amazing, Ben, because there are very few, if any, resources out there. There's a lot of stuff about working in the marketplace, but entrepreneurs, we don't want to know how to get along with everybody in the company. I want to know, what does God say about using debt to grow the business? How do I go about examining opportunities that come my way? Because not all opportunities are good. And so God takes me through this, and I'll tell you right now, he's cleaned me out, Ben. I mean, he's sucked dry basically every account that I have, all in an effort for me to completely understand what it really means to be a Christian entrepreneur. And I won't tell you that I'm 100% there because I never am. I mean, he's just really taken me through the ringer. For the most part, it's been exceptionally humbling because I've always prided myself on making money at will. And that's one thing that God has taken away from me. He's done a lot to me in this time, and he's completely changed my heart. He's completely changed the way I think about business. He's completely changed the way I approach business, about the way I look at opportunities. I mean, he's just completely turned my world upside down. It's been frustrating. It's been painful. There's been a lot of tears shed, but I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Just to clarify, when you say the Lord cleaned you out, what kind of numbers were you doing before the shakeup happened?
150 grand a month. I was walking out, and I remember I had a business partner. I was walking out with about 30 grand a month. That's my net.
Most people can't barely make that in a year.
Yeah, that's like real money, last time I checked. I haven't pulled a dime out of the company in 5-6 months. There's nothing to pull out. You know, we're losing. I'll put it even in greater perspective. We were netting $60,000 a month. I am now losing $10,000 to $15,000 a month.
Well, it's a good thing you had the savings.
We make it up on volume.
Well, at least you can laugh about it. You know, I mean, that's devastating to think about.
Hey, look, I'll tell you right now. You know, I've had some nights where I've been pretty hacked off. I mean, there's been a lot of tear shed. I mean, I'm laughing today, but I could be crying tomorrow. I mean, it's exceptionally humbling. I mean, I was a guy that first got exposed to Dan Kennedy in 2004. By 2006, I was one of Dan's golden boys. I mean, he was sticking me on stage every chance he got, doing million-dollar events, just killing it, Ben. I mean, just killing it. And I got pretty full of myself. I thought I was pretty damn good at what I did. And that was kind of one of the lessons that God showed me through this whole thing. So the reason why I'm so open, Ben, is that the enemy wants us to feel shame when we have failures. I've been through that emotion. And all that shame gets you is more frustration and more heartache. I mean, I have joy about the situation that I'm in because I know God is doing some great things through me and in me. But we need to just flat out be more open about the skeletons in our closet. I've always said, if Bill Clinton were to have said, you're right, I screwed up, I've been sleeping with everything that's got a pulse for the last 25 years, and I enjoy it. I mean, if he would have said that, like 85% of the people would have gone, well, okay. Some people are like, oh, gosh, I can't believe that just happened to you. Like, look, I'll tell you right now, I went from a big chunk of cash in the bank, kids' college accounts taken care of, driving a nice car, to $750,000 upside down. Time to sell the car, time to dump the house, and you know, this is really motivating, I'm sure, for people. But there's people who are listening to this right now who are in that exact same situation. And what I found by being open about this is everyone's like, oh, my gosh, these guys are real. I mean, we're real people. I don't know about you, Ben, but I'm just as screwed up as everybody else on this who's listening to this call. I share it because I find that every time I share it, people are encouraged by it. I mean, the business is coming back, and we're picking up speed and all that good stuff, and God's going to restore it. But you notice I'm saying God's going to restore it because I sure as heck tried to restore it over the last 24 months, and all I did was screw it up more.
Now, what does it mean exactly to run a Christ-centered business? And I assume that's what you're talking about here, and you're letting him take care of it. What does that mean exactly?
To run a Christ-centered business is to go against pretty much everything that's been drilled into our mind in America and in media. And if you watch TV, you get bombarded with manifest your destiny, look deep inside yourself and you'll find the answer of what you're supposed to do. Do what you want, where you want, when you want, with whom you want, whenever you want. And you hear the stuff of The Secret. Yeah, you ever watch Boston Legal? William Shatner plays Denny Crane and he's kind of like this spaced out attorney. They come into the office and he's got his hand up to his forehead and his eyes squinted and you can tell he's like really concentrating really hard and they go, what are you trying to do? And he goes, well, I read The Secret last night and so I'm trying to manifest Raquel Welch. So, like, the next scene, they come in, and all of a sudden, they go, Denny, you've got someone to see you. And they go, who's that? And they go, it's Phyllis Diller. And here he is trying to manifest Raquel Welch, and he gets Phyllis Diller. And my friends always go, well, it's a start. And my reply is, have you seen Phyllis lately? Because that's a long, far cry from Raquel Welch. I used to be in a mastermind group with a guy who was really big into The Secret, and he got indicted and lost everything and went to jail. And the big question in the group was, did he manifest that? You know, this whole concept of that we're God, and this is really hard for Americans and especially entrepreneurs to get because we become entrepreneurs because we want to control our destiny, right? And then if I'm a Christian, they go, well, I'm just going to ask God to bless everything that I do because God's a genie, right? He's the ultimate genie. And if I'm a business person and I'm a Christian, that means everything is going to be blessed. Well, I can tell you it doesn't work out that way. So what it means to run a Christ-centered business is that it's all about his, and capitalize the word his, purposes. It's not about our purposes. It's about his purposes. And this is so hard. This is so contrarian to the whole message of being an entrepreneur. I'm going to work from home. I'm going to work the four-hour work week. Well, if you were to ask Timothy Ferris, he doesn't work 4 hours a week. I know people who know him. They say the guy like works incessantly. This whole concept of I'm going to work, and I'm going to take 8 months off a year and play golf and go live on the French Riviera. I mean, that sounds great from the stage, but I know a lot of the top speakers, and none of them do that. We're made to work. Genesis, post-fall, men are made to work, and women don't send me an email saying I'm a chauvinist. I mean, but we're made to work. I mean, we're made to till the soil, and we're made to reap a harvest by the sweat of our brow. It's frankly unbiblical to not work. I mean, who wants to go to Florida and play golf for the last 20 years of their life? I mean, it's boring. And I'm a recovering golf pro. I go on a week-long vacation, and I can't wait to get back in the office. Not because I don't love my wife and my kids, but God created me to work. And I love to work. But I spent the first 40 years of my life trying to do what Matt Galogli wanted, and it got me broke. Now I'm going to spend the next 120 years of my life doing what the Lord asks me to do. And it's going to be about his purposes and his desires. And so I always like to refer to Matthew 6:33, which is, seek first the kingdom and its righteousness, and all this will be given to you. Most people want to just focus on the last part of that verse, all this will be given to you. But you've got to seek God first, and you have to seek his righteousness. Now, righteousness is not a bad word. Everybody goes, oh, gosh, righteousness. What are you, a Southern Baptist? What are you, Pentecostal? Whatever, what are you, Catholic? You know, pick one to offend, right? But righteousness is his right ways of living. Well, what are his right ways of living? His right ways of living, they begin and end with the top ten, the Ten Commandments. And what's the first commandment? The first commandment, and I wrote on this morning, and I'm going to paraphrase this, is, but you should have no other gods before me. So if we think that our ability to create money or our ability to do things, or we're going to go do something to buy a big brand new car, a big brand new house, again, nothing wrong with having a nice house and a nice car. But as we go through this call, people will understand that after you go through this true understanding of what it means to be a Christian entrepreneur, none of that stuff really matters. It's about the matter of the heart. When we really start to understand that all the different gods that we place in front of God, that we put more value in, we realize that we don't do a very good job of following the first commandment. And God convicted me one day, and he said, Matt, you know all those books you have on your shelf and all that great material? And I spend like a couple of hundred grand a year on this stuff. All those groups that you belong to and all those events you go to. I went, yeah. He goes, never once have you asked me what I think about any of those business things you're doing. It's kind of like when you're an 8-year-old kid and you just got busted, looking up Mary Jacob Pickney's skirt or something like that, and you couldn't deny it, or breaking Elmer Fudd's window with a baseball bat, whatever it was. I mean, it was exactly like that. I was like looking down. I had my hands behind my back, and I was pawing the ground with my foot, looking down at it, trying to come up with a cute, clever answer, and I couldn't. And so to run a Christ-centered business means that I'm going to co-labor with God. And it's going to be about his purposes and his desires. And it's not about my purposes and my desires. It's not about going to God, okay, God, I really love you. I've got this deal closing on Friday. I'm going to make $30,000, and you get 10%, God. So since you're getting 10%, have it closed without a hitch. But what if we went to God and said, Lord, I just love you so much. You're my daddy. I just love you so much, God, and I know you love me unconditionally. What do you want me to do? Do you want me to go do this deal where I'm going to JV somebody's product? We can go do it for the money, or God, what's part of your plan in this? And I totally ignore that for a significant portion of my life as a believer. So to run a Christ-centered business, first and foremost, it's about his purposes and his desires. The second thing is it's about putting God in front of everything. I mean, all these books that I have on my shelf, all the newsletters I get, now when I read them, I ask the Lord to show me the things that he wants me to pull away from these newsletters. Because if we read it unchecked with just our own personal fleshly desires, all the ideas sound good. But if we approach it and say, Lord, I know there's a lot of great ideas in here, and I know that there's a lot of different ways, but Lord, I just want you to show me the one thing or the few things, or if there's anything in here that you want me to start installing into your business, God. And this is really hard for entrepreneurs to get. Like, they all bristle when I tell them this. I mean, this is not my business. This is God's. I'm just simply like the general manager, and I've got a really good profit-sharing program. But I am a steward, and I've got to check in with my chairman and CEO on a regular basis, on a daily basis. What if we were to just go to God and say, look, you know, do you want me to work with this client or not? Or what would it be like if God was co-laboring with you when you were writing copy? We're moving in his power, not in ours. And his power is way better. So to me, the Christ-centered business is, it's not just Sunday, it's every day. How I'm a Christian reflects as much about how I treat my kids at Walmart when they're screaming out for a chocolate bar as it does when I'm sitting in church looking all pious and righteous. So it's in everything that we do.
You were saying that God might want you to do something different than what you want to do. Have you found in your life and in others where you've observed this, where what God wants you to do is actually more fulfilling than the thing you thought you wanted to do originally?
Yeah. Oh, it's way better.
So it's not something people should be running away from and thinking, oh, man, I'm not going to ask God because I don't want him to tell me something I don't want to hear.
Yeah, that's going to happen because they're all afraid that God's going to tell them to sell everything and move to Ethiopia.
But if that was to happen, you would actually feel pretty good about moving to Ethiopia.
I got a theory about entrepreneurs. Not only are we control freaks, but we actually love the adventure of it, right? I mean, you know, I know your background of you living in your office and having a shower in the sink, but in its own strange way, you probably, I don't want to say lovingly, and I don't want to say fondly, but it's like, you know, we all have kind of like this sick point in our life when things were absolutely going nowhere, and we all go, boy, those were the good old days, right? Because there was some, think about the joy and the adventure of, waking up on Tuesday and you got to get rent in by noon and you're overdrawn by $1,500 in the account and you've got no prospects on the horizon. Right? Isn't that what entrepreneurs live for?
When you're doing it, you're not real happy about it, but when you've solved the problem or whatever, you're like, hey.
Yeah, we high-five the mirror and beat our chest, tell everybody that will listen how great we are. The reason why people love becoming entrepreneurs is they're bored out of their flipping mind with what they're doing, and they want excitement back in their life. Well, then to be a faith-filled entrepreneur where you're going to trust in God, what better way to go and just really live life on the edge? Now, for some people, living life on the edge means I'm not going to have any money in my bank account. For other people, it's going to be other things. It doesn't mean that God's going to suck you dry and take away all your money. Just because it happened to me doesn't mean it's going to happen to you. But there is some great wonder and amazement to see how God can work. I just think that we miss out so much in enjoying the ride and enjoying what the ride could be as entrepreneurs because we're unwilling to let God take control. We'd rather fly the little Cessna all on our own than to be the co-pilot in the F-16 fighter jet. Now, the ride in the F-16 fighter jet's scarier, but boy, it's a lot of fun.
I'm just wondering, when you were told to get out of the real estate thing and do the Christian entrepreneur thing, what was it, like a gut feeling, or how was he talking to you exactly?
No, he talks. I mean, I hear his voice. Now, some people are going to go, oh, geez, this guy's off his rocker. No, I hear it. I mean, I hear the audible voice of the Lord. And if I don't pay attention to that, one of two things will happen is the Lord will come and visit me in dreams. Like, it's not God standing at the base of my bed going, go work with Christian entrepreneurs. Like, it's kind of like a hidden thing. But the thing that he does that really just whacks me out is he'll start having people that don't even know me. Like, the old lady at the grocery store when you're picking out tomatoes will come up next to you and go, you know, I just sense that you like to work with Christian entrepreneurs. And you'll go, get away from me. You're really wigging me out.
So you're getting, like, little clues.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Bible will be open to something specifically that the Lord put on my heart. I'll give you an example of this. Totally freaked me out. This was end of January 2008. Went out to a place called the International House of Prayer in Kansas City, and they have a 24/7 prayer room. They go 24/7, 365 days a year. They've been going since 1999. And they do events with a thing called the Joseph Company, and the Joseph Company is for marketplace leaders and for entrepreneurs to come. It's like a six-day leadership retreat to understand how to pray and all this fun stuff. And it's really an amazing trip. So I go out there, and like most entrepreneurs, I've got my guard up. This prayer thing's fine for the people that are intercessors and God visiting in a dream. I mean, that's good for you guys that have prophetic skills, but I'm a business guy. Give me a balance sheet, right? And the first day, everybody's walking around in the room, and they're talking about how tough they are. By like day three, they're all weeping like little kids because the Lord is just touching their heart so much. And so in day two, we go to the prayer room in the morning, and this is a big old converted grocery store. So there's like 400 people in here, and they've got music going and a band up there, and they do this thing called rapid fire prayer. And they go, okay, anybody's here for the Joseph Company event, stand up, come out of the aisles, and people are going to pray for you. Okay. So they're praying. People are putting their hands on me, and there's like five or six people around, and I don't know any of these people from Adam. And at the end of one of the prayers, this guy goes, Deuteronomy 8:18. And I went, oh, okay, hey, thanks. I don't even go look it up. I'm like, okay, thanks, weird intercessor guy. Stay away. So later on that day, I'm back in the prayer room, and they do another rapid-fire prayer thing. So I stand up, and afterwards, one of the other people that's praying looks at me and goes, the whole time I was standing next to you, I kept seeing Deuteronomy 8:18 over your head. I'm going, okay, this is getting really weird. Day three, Deuteronomy 8:18 pops up. Intercessor prayer, I just really get the sense that you're in this difficult season, blah, 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 blah. And the Lord wants you to know Deuteronomy 8:18. So after about the fifth time, I go and I look it up. And it is, remember, it is the Lord your God who gives you the power to get wealth. Now, God had been placing that on my heart, like saying, you got to remember, I'm in charge, right? But I wasn't letting go. And he kept putting Deuteronomy 8:18 in front of me constantly until I finally decided that, you know what, I think I'm going to open this up and read about it. And then I started reading like the corollaries to it because of this study Bible and all the verses that relate to it. And it was all about the Israelites. They have a history of prospering. They're dead broke, without a country. They seek God. Oh, God, we love you, we love you, we love you. God blesses them. They have a bunch of successes. Within three generations, the kids got false idols in the house. They're watching MTV. They're driving Mercedes-Benz. And wham, God takes it all away from them, throws them in captivity. Oh, Lord, we're sorry, we're sorry, we're sorry. Waits for that generation to die off, lifts up another generation, blesses them. I mean, this happens constantly in the Old Testament about Israel straying from God and God getting ticked and taking away their country and their wealth and their riches. And so Deuteronomy 8:18 is what God told the Israelites after they had been wandering through the wilderness for 40 years. They kept going around the mountain for 40 years until that unbelieving generation died off. And as they're getting ready to cross over the Jordan River into Israel to take the land that God promised them, God goes, now, wait a second, I don't want you to forget. Remember, it's the Lord your God who gives you the power to get wealth. Now, what does the world tell us? The world tells us that we have the power to get wealth, and we don't. We don't have the power to get wealth. Only God has the power to get wealth, and it's when we seek him and we go after him and we co-labor with Christ, it's at that point that this prophetic word written in Deuteronomy 8:18 comes true. Like, if we seek God in everything that we do, I'm not talking about like what you're going to order at lunch when you go to Denny's. Don't sit there and go, oh, Lord, illuminate what I'm supposed to have for lunch. Not that. But I have friends of mine, Ben, who are real estate investors who pray over their deals. And one of these guys, he's an acquaintance. He's not really a friend. He's sharing this story with me. He's down in Wilmington, North Carolina, which is along the coast. And this is at the beginning of summer. And, you know, the real estate market's not doing well. And he said, God, I've got all these deals. He said, basically what I do is I put vacant land under contract and I flip it to a developer and I make 500 grand, a million bucks, whatever. And that's all I do. I said, I've been doing it for 25 years. And he said, I know a deal. And he said, I know what are not deals. And so I'm in the market down there is really bad. Developers aren't buying vacant land. And I'm praying over these deals. And God keeps leading me to this very below average deal, real below average deal. And it was like God was illuminating it. And he said, God, you're nuts. There's no way that that's a good deal. This is a bad market. You must be crazy. He said, well, I go and try and do a couple of other deals, and those don't work. And I keep coming back, and it was like every single time I got back into the office, God was shining his light on this deal. So he said, I have a long enough history with God to realize that I should be following this. So he said, I decide that I'm going to move forward in this deal. So I put this deal under contract, and I don't have the numbers exact, but you'll get an idea. He said, I put the deal under contract for $1.2 million. And he said, my goal is to flip it to a developer for about $1.6, $1.7 million. It's about 120 acres right along the Intercoastal Waterway. He said, it's a nice development property. So he said, we go and do our phase two analysis of the property, and we realize that there's $3.5 million worth of sugar sand underneath the ground. Now, sugar sand is a big commodity. They harvest this sand in other places, and they put it on beaches that are eroding, like down in Destin and places like that. Because there's $3.5 million worth of sugar sand. It's going to take 3 to 5 years to harvest it. And I said, well, what happens with the land that you have now once you harvest the sugar sand? He goes, I have lakes on my property, and the value of my property goes up exponentially. He said, I got that deal because I had a history in developing my prayer life with God. And he said, and I remembered that it's God, not me, who gives me the power to get wealth. He said, I wouldn't have done that deal at all. And Ben, if I can tell you that story one time, I can tell you that story 100 times about other people with similar situations and businesses. Guys who the Lord puts in their heart to get out of a particular stock, and sure enough, a couple weeks later, that stock is tanking, or to buy things and the stock market increases. I mean, this is what it means to co-labor with Christ. Now, this isn't some shaman thing where I'm rolling my third eye up and sitting in a lotus position and I'm inhaling some funny smelling grass. This is the God of the universe, and this is real stuff. I mean, God is real. There's no doubt in my mind that God exists. There's no doubt in my mind that unquestionably the Bible is the most historically accurate text known to mankind. Atheists, archaeologists use it to find ancient cities in Israel. This is a historically accurate text. So if that's historically accurate, then why wouldn't God want us to prosper? This isn't the prosperity gospel. I'm not saying, oh, give 500 bucks and here's the mailing address and God's going to give you $5,000 back. No, this is about co-laboring with Christ. So I can tell you that's just way more fun than trying to do it on your own.
Is that why some Christian entrepreneurs profit while others don't? Because one group is listening to what God is saying and the other isn't?
It comes down to one thing, and that's about the heart. Listening to God is 95% of it, but an even larger, greater portion of it has to do with what's the condition of your heart. Daniel 1:8 says that Daniel purposed in his heart not to defile himself with the delicacies of the king. And this was after Daniel had been dragged away from Jerusalem into Babylon. He's 15 years old. Nebuchadnezzar, who's a head lopper, is basically going to say, you're going to eat my food, you're going to learn the wisdom of the Chaldeans and the writings of the Chaldeans, and I'm going to reprogram you, and you're going to stay in this palace, you're going to have all this luxury, but you've got to do things the way we do it here. And Daniel basically says, I'm not going to defile myself with the delicacies of the king. And sure enough, he doesn't, and God blesses him. And the reason why is that Daniel stayed true to God. And that's why some Christian entrepreneurs profit and others don't. The Christian entrepreneurs that are willing to stay true to God and do what God wants and to surrender their hearts completely, their minds completely, their businesses completely, and to really just have a passion about serving God, those are the ones that traditionally prosper. David was that way. Daniel was that way. Abraham was that way. Joseph was that way. Job was that way. David didn't care about being king of Israel. David cared about his relationship with God. And when his son Absalom rose up against David to take over the kingdom, and the city is being ransacked, David is standing there and he's getting ready to flee, and his chief priest Zadok says to him, David, what are you going to do? I mean, you're going to lose your kingdom. You could wind up being dead. And David says, I don't care about the kingdom. I don't care about being king. I don't care about the palaces, the horses. I don't care about any of that stuff as long as I've got God. Some people want to be, well, God's cool as long as he takes care of me. But what if God doesn't bless you? Are you still going to love him unconditionally? Are you still going to have a heart for him? Let's say he calls you to go do a business, and for 20 years it doesn't work. And you go through bankruptcy after bankruptcy, and you lose the house, and you wind up living in a smelly cave with a bunch of other broke, bankrupt people. Would you still love God? I mean, that's what David had to do. David's living in the palace, and before you know it, he's living in the cave of Adullam, and here's what God sends him, 400 other people that are broke and bankrupt. This is saying in most cases, not in every case, but what I find is that deep down inside, they're still waiting for God to be the genie without doing any work. There's that four-letter word, work.
You teach that a Christian entrepreneur's duty is to fund the kingdom. Now, what do you mean by that exactly?
Here's the deal. I'm going to use you as an example, Ben. What is the thing that's near and dear to your heart that you want to fix, or you want to cure, or you want to fund? Is it battered women, homeless kids, save the whales, treat, whatever? What's the thing that you just have a great passion about from a philanthropic standpoint?
I have a big passion for dogs and dog shelters.
So the natural progression is that people go, oh, well, I have a passion for dogs and dog shelters. That would be a good thing for me to give money to from my business. So God, what do you say? I'm going to support dogs and dog shelters. You prosper my business, and I'll give to dogs and dog shelters. Right? That makes sense, right? It's a pretty normal thing. So here's my question. What if God doesn't prosper you, and you aren't able to fund dogs and dog shelters? Would you feel like a failure?
You know what? That kind of happened to me in a way. This was last year. I thought dogs was the market I wanted to go after. And this is what I thought was interesting about what you were saying before. I thought it was dogs because I love dogs. I have a dog. I've always loved dogs. I wrote a book pretty easily about dogs, only to find out I'm really not all that into dogs. You know, I was even on the radio doing radio interviews and stuff, and I'm like, I have like two boxes of books here I still haven't sold. I just kind of lost interest in it. Like, and I remember praying about it. I'm like, I get the feeling your dogs isn't really the thing I'm supposed to be doing because I just had no motivation to do it. I found something else recently, I think, that fills that void a lot better. But it's funny that you bring that up because that was kind of my thing. You know, donate a bunch of sales to the dog causes and stuff, and it just didn't work that way.
Yeah. I'll overgeneralize, and I'm not going to say that this is exactly how you were thinking. But deep down inside, you would go, the normal thing is that people would go, oh, yeah, I'll attach to dogs, right? Because they hear all the new age stuff of, okay, you got to give 10% and you got to give money away, and the more you give, the more you get back. What if you give and you got nothing back? And so my question for everybody is, doesn't God want me to take care of dogs? I'm like, I don't know if God wants you to take care of dogs or not. I can promise you one thing. God doesn't care about dogs, and he doesn't care about feeding the homeless people in Philadelphia, and he doesn't care about the widows in Buffalo. At this juncture, all he cares about is your heart. Now, in the big picture, God does care about all those things, but all he cares about is your heart. And most people go, well, secretly, if you were to like pump them full of two bottles of red wine and some truth serum, they'd go, well, all right, I'm really just doing the dog thing because I want a Mercedes-Benz 500 series car, and I want to get hog nasty rich and live in a big house and have a mountain place. And I'm just using the dogs to make it sound better and hoping that God blesses me. God sees right through this. So going back to this, I teach that Christian entrepreneurs' duty is to fund the kingdom. What I really mean, it's their duty to take back the mountain from the enemy. That's their duty. Ben, do you watch TV at all or go to movies?
Very little.
Okay. But if Christians are ticked off about what they see on TV, they have nobody to blame but themselves because we abdicated our role in media a long time ago. We freely and easily handed it over to the enemy without even thinking about it. And what they did was we just said, oh, well, you know, as Christians, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get in my own little private bunker and I'm going to go to church and I'm going to homeschool my kids and we're just going to live in our own little private Idaho and we're not going to pay attention to the world. That's what God really wants me to do. No, God wants you to, if you're gifted at business, then go get in the business arena and slay the enemy. People get all packed off because McDonald's has made it their number one initiative that they're going to support the Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, and they've made a major contribution to the Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce and to forwarding their initiative, and McDonald's gets a couple seats on their board and all that other fun stuff. And so my buddy sends me this email, and he goes, it's time to boycott McDonald's French fries. I send him an email back. I go, that's really noble, but I've got a 2.5-year-old. I ain't got a shot. And besides, I really like McDonald's French fries. If boycotts worked, we never would have had to take care of Saddam Hussein. If boycotts worked, Castro would have been out of power decades ago. If boycotts worked, we wouldn't have to worry about that crazy Iman Jahid guy in Iran making nuclear power. Sun Young Soo, or whatever the heck his name is, Kim, or whatever that little beady little guy is with the funny little glasses and the $2 haircut in North Korea is, whoever he is, he would have been long gone. Boycotts don't work. Let's take down the enemy. So if we're really hacked off about the fact that McDonald's is funding the Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, let's do something radical. Let's buy McDonald's. Let's go greenmail Ronald McDonald. Let's go put together a Christian hedge fund, and let's go buy 10% of the stock of McDonald's. And what we do is we send them a nice little note and say, we want 4 seats on your board, or you're going to have an ugly proxy fight. McDonald's hems and haws. They think about it, and they go, how about 3 seats? And we say yes. Now we put 3 righteous, praying men and women on that board who have a heart for God and don't care about the size of their house and don't care about the size of their car, and they have hearts pure for the Lord, like Daniel in 1:8, and they're not going to defile themselves with the delicacies of the king, and they're going to come in, and when they come in, the armies of the angels of the Lord are going to be a hell of a lot more powerful than the 1/3 demons that are floating around that room.
What you just described reminds me so much of pastor that I study with. He's actually out of Arkansas, so I don't get to go there very often, but he calls that being wiser than the serpent.
Yep, that's it, man. Okay, everybody goes, oh, I want to fund the kingdom. I want to help orphans. To heck with that, I want to put together a couple of Christian hedge funds, and I want to buy ABC. I want to buy CBS. I want to buy Fox News, and not because I'm going to make it all Christian stations. I mean, God, that would be boring, wouldn't it? Let's beat the enemy at their game. Let's be stealth bombers for Christ. Let's take back Hollywood, right? Let's not pray for Ellen DeGeneres to get saved. Let's pray that, like, the camera guy gets saved. Let's pray that Christians who are in, instead of thinking that the only way that they can serve God is by being a pastor or by going to Uganda, let's raise up guys like you and I who are totally sold out to the Lord, who love the Lord with all their heart, soul, and mind, and get the heebie-jeebies about sleeping in a tent in Uganda. Let's raise guys like you and I up, and Ryan Healy, and a bunch of the other guys that you put me in contact with, and guys like my buddy Bob Rignaris and Chauncey Hunter and Nate Haggerty and all these guys who run successful businesses, and let them be financial eunuchs. Let's not run a business so that we can have a $28 million retirement parachute. Well, that's nice, but let's run it so that we can then go buy other companies. This battle and this war that we're waging against the enemy is a multi-pronged attack. You know, there's a reason why when we invaded Europe, we had a number of different fronts that we fought it on. Right? We came up underneath and we went through North Africa and through Italy, and we hit them from the Eastern Front from Russia, and then we hit them on the Western Front. We engaged the enemy in multiple different places along an extended line, and we strung out their resources so that they couldn't compete with us. The great thing about World War II is we just had more planes, more trains, and more automobiles, and more people and more guns and bullets. They couldn't keep up. We have 2/3 of the armies of the angels of the Lord. The enemy's got 1/3. Now, don't you think our 2/3 a little bit better than his 1/3? The devil's good at his job. He's a competent devil. He's very gifted at what he does. But the bottom line is that if we engage the enemy on multiple fronts, and we don't sit there and going, oh, the enemy's attacking me, my life is horrible. I'm like, you know what? So what? You got God. You got the maker of heaven and earth on your side. Why don't you just, like, get your dad involved? My dad's a lot better at beating up the other guy's dad, right? Because my dad's God. His is whatever demon or whatever. So let's just get after it. People complain about, oh, the public school system, and, you know, I've got an atheist teaching my kids science. Well, what have you done to talk to that atheist about the truth of God? What have you done to raise up your daughter or your son to make them warriors for God? Or are you just taking them to church on Sunday from 10:30 to 11:30? What are you doing with the other 4,000 hours that you've got your kid? Are you putting that responsibility on the church 40 hours a year, sending them to, like, Bible study camp, and you're going to learn about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and everything's going to be hunky-dory? No, they're going to go to college. They're going to get introduced to the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and, you know, and they're going to have a weak faith, and wham, they're playing for the other team before you know it. I mean, we've got to raise up warriors for the Lord. And it starts with being businessmen and businesswomen. Entrepreneurs change the world. All change happens in business, even in the Bible. Abraham, David, Isaac, Joseph, Job. I mean, go through it. Paul made tents. Peter was a fisherman. Matthew was a tax collector. Heck, Jesus Christ was a carpenter, for goodness sakes. He wasn't even a technically trained rabbi. I hack so many people off because I'm just like, so you've been to seminary. Great. I tended bar. Like, what has that got to do with anything?
Yeah.
You know, so you're more technically trained in the Greek than I am. I got a lot of good friends that go to seminary, and I really appreciate and respect their knowledge, because when I don't understand something and I want to get the Greek etymology and all that fun stuff, I call them. But this whole concept of the only way that I can serve God is by going to seminary, and I went through this. They don't want me at seminary. Like, that's the lad. They'd be like, yeah, God, get him out of here. There's only one way to the Father, but there's many ways to Christ. I've got a friend of mine led this Bible study group that I went to for years in the morning, men's Bible study group, and he goes down to Myrtle Beach 1 week a month. He's an insurance salesman, and they have a retirement place down there. He said, we go to church in a bar. Their church on Sunday morning is held with like the Pink Pony or something like that. And the owner's there, and he's all hungover and everything like that. And guess what? The owner gave his life to the Lord. The pastor weighed like 280 pounds, and he always wore Hawaiian shorts, flip-flops, and a pair of shorts, and he was like 68 years old. This was a guy that was on fire for the Lord. He's holding church in a bar that smells like beer and urine. And they're packing it up. They're leading people to the Lord left and right. God doesn't care. My business, your business, this call, there's going to be somebody listening to this call who's been on the fence about giving their life to Christ, and they're going to hear us talking, and they're going to go, oh my gosh, I can be a Christian and not have to sell everything? I'm not going to have to go be a eunuch for the Lord and go to seminary? No. I mean, look at Ben and I. I mean, we're pretty screwed up, right, Ben?
I am far from perfect.
Yeah.
What are some more of the business lessons you've learned just from reading the Bible and praying, and you know, what answers have come to you?
Well, my two favorite books about business in the Bible are Proverbs and Ecclesiastics. I just love those two. In fact, I have a membership site where I work with people, and I work with Christian entrepreneurs, right? And so I do these video trainings. So I do like 30-minute, I send them 30-minute video trainings every 2 weeks. And so I was shooting this Camtasia, and I taught on Proverbs 2. And I won't give you the full teaching, but I mean, basically, if you read Proverbs 2, it says, go into verse 4, it says, if you seek her as silver and search for her as hidden treasure, and her meaning wisdom, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. And this one was given to me probably about 10 months ago. And the most important business lesson that I've learned from reading the Bible is, am I spending more time trying to find the buried treasure that God has me on the quest for and for the silver that he has me on the quest for? Am I spending more time reading the books of the world to try and find those answers, or am I spending more time seeking God for those answers? Probably that's the biggest, most important business lesson, is that God's in control. It's not, you know, how much debt should I carry and direct marketing plan or try to write an ebook or sell audio tape or have a newsletter or anything like that. Those are all secondary to the primary thing, and that is seeking God like we would buried treasure and silver. There's so many great verses in Proverbs. Honor the Lord with your possessions and with the first fruits of your increase. Happy is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding, for her proceeds are better than the profits of silver and her gain than fine gold. That's Proverbs 3:13-14. What did Solomon ask for? God, just give me wisdom. God will generously give you wisdom if you seek him out.
Now, we were sort of alluding to this earlier. You were talking about taking things back from the enemy. So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about spiritual warfare here, and how does that affect Christian business owners?
I'm convinced it impacts it more than somebody who's called to be a pastor. And this isn't just my opinion. This is my opinion of a couple of other business guys that I know, and this is me talking to pastors and intercessors that I know. I have a couple of intercessors on staff. We have a prayer room in our office, and they come in a couple times a week, and we pray, and we talk about this quite a bit. And, I mean, these are people that pray 50 hours a week. That's their job. Satan realizes that one of the missing ingredients in the church is money, and not to build bigger sanctuaries. So let's think about this. If the enemy realizes that if I were to have profitable businesses that are throwing up $100 million worth of cash, don't you think I could do some damage in the world with that? Even if it's $100 million or if it's throwing up $100,000, I can do some damage with that. And not just buying beds at the local homeless shelter. That's, again, that's very noble and that's great. And the Bible's very clear that we're to take care of the widows and the orphans first, the poor and the widows and the orphans. That's where we're supposed to do our work. But let's use a coffee shop as an example. So let's say I'm running successful businesses, and I go out and I decide to buy like a small chain in Charlotte of like two or three coffee shops. Now, coffee shops are a unique place because, you know, the reason why Starbucks and all these coffee shops are so successful is people are craving for community. You work out of your house, right, Ben?
Right.
I have an office, and today my other guy, he's not here. He's out of town the rest of this week, and I'm bored. I'm lonely. And people are lonely in their lives. We all hide behind a computer screen and chat and texts and cell phones and things like that. But you cannot replace sitting down face-to-face with somebody and having a meal or having a cup of coffee and talking with them. You and I, we've known about each other for about 3 years through our blogs and stuff. We just talked for the first time a couple weeks ago. We have this little bit of a friendship going. But if one of us were to get on a plane and go buy the other dinner, if I were to fly out to Oregon and buy you dinner, we'd have a completely different level of friendship. So a meal is one of the great ways for us to be able to share with each other and get to know each other. Same thing with a cup of coffee. So let's say I was profitable enough in business and I go out and I buy 3 coffee shops. And in those coffee shops, what I do is I create an environment where people not only can share, but let's say that we let everybody know that there's intercessors on staff. Or during the hours of operation, there's a guy over there playing guitar and he's singing about Christ. Not, oh, Jesus, oh, Jesus, oh, Jesus. I mean, there's a number of different songs that can be sound very mainstream that people would start singing and they wouldn't know that the lyrics really mean. And the staff walk around and while they're cleaning up, they go, is there anything that I can pray for you today? So, now see, Satan realizes that that would have as much impact, if not more, on leading people to the Lord than it would at a church, because there's people who will never go to church. It would be highly unlikely for me to be able to get my next-door neighbor, Tom and Melanie, to come to church. He went one time, and he ain't coming back. He enjoyed it. The music was great. I go to a non-denominational church. I mean, it's like a rock concert, right? But I can have more impact on him having a cup of coffee with him in an environment like that than I can by taking him to church, because his guard is up. So, see, the enemy realizes that we can be stealth bombers. So now let's say it was like a dry cleaning place, or let's say it was a grocery store, and we had a prayer room in the grocery store, and we made it voluntary that anybody on staff can come in and pray. They need prayer. I mean, there's a bank in Elk River that is known as the Praying Church. It's called the Elk River Story. I highly recommend you read about it. And people know that if you need prayer, you go to the Elk River Bank. It's a community bank. When you make your deposit, the tellers ask, is there anything that we can be praying for you? People have been led to the Lord in the teller line. See, the enemy realizes this is the final frontier, and he will do absolutely anything to make sure that business people don't succeed. He'll hit our greed gland. He'll bollocks up our communications. He'll prevent emails from going through. Now, Satan can't do anything without God-given first approval, but God really wants to make sure that we're not just putting on a show about us running this Christ-centered business. He really wants us to contend for it. If you're going to really run a Christ-centered business, it's more than saying, I'm a Christian, let me stick a fish on the back of my car, here's our company, Life First. Oh, isn't it great at Christmas time? We bought turkeys for the homeless. No. It's about warring in the spirit. It's about praying. The battle here on earth cannot be won until the battle is won in the heavenlies. As Isaiah 45 says, if you want the double doors of prosperity to open up over your life, if you want God to make the crooked paths straight and to break the iron bars and to smash the bronze gates, if you want God to do all of that, as he did in Isaiah 45, then you have to understand what happened prior to that. Daniel prayed, and he prayed and he fasted for 21 days, and he had to win the battle in the heavenlies before he could win the battle here on earth. I actually do a whole teaching on this, which we can talk about that later, but I did like 4 whole weeks on this, 4 whole hours on this, about if we think that there is not spiritual warfare, that there are not battles that are fought, why don't you just come spend like a day with me? Now, I get to fight more than I think most because I'm really upfront with my stuff, and I like go nanny-nanny poo-poo to the enemy. I like to stir the pot. And this makes a lot of people uncomfortable. Now, Ben, if you were to say, I'm going to run a Christ-centered information marketing business, and I'm going to write copy that brings glory to the Lord, even if I'm selling, like, male enhancement prosthetics, there would be this serious tug and pull that would go on. Again, this is just being real and about understanding about everything that really is going on in this whole thing. When I put a prayer room in my office, and I told my wife that I was going to do this, and when I told her that I was going to start working with Christian entrepreneurs, I told her, you better get ready. And she didn't buy into it. She's like, if God wants you to do this, then God's going to bless it. I go, no, God's going to sort and sift me, and he's going to sift us like wheat. And that's really what he's done. Now, I'm not saying that you all have to go through bankruptcy. We all go through different things. For some people, it's losing all your money. Some people, it's cancer. Some people, it's losing a child. Some people, it's whatever. There's different things. This whole concept that as Christians we're not going to have a hard life is a bunch of crap. It might have been easier to do business as a heathen, but I'm sure as a heck of a lot happier doing business as a Christian. We think prosperity in America is a big house and a nice car, staying at the Ritz-Carlton. Prosperity, in God's view, is way more than that. Nowhere did in the Bible does it say, I'm going to prosper you and stick you in a gated community with a big pool, tennis courts, and horses? I mean, you know, on the 17th green, right? God prospered a lot of different ways. Prospered with camels. I mean, camels smell.
They fart.
They fart and they spit. I mean, they're nasty creatures.
How are running a Christ-centered business, especially the way you've been talking about, how's that going to affect not only a Christian's business, but their personal life too?
I'll tell you right now, I've been married 15, almost 16 years. I've been with my wife 18, almost 19 years. And I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that everything's hunky-dory. I mean, we've been through a lot. We've had to, like, lift up the bandage and look at the pussing, oozing scab that neither one of us wanted to look at and pick at and fix. We're no different than any other couple. We got issues. I'm different than she is, and some days I hack her off, and some days she hacks me off. I'll also tell you that the number one unifying thing in all of this is my wife and I have committed to praying together 2 times a day. And some days the prayers are great, and we've got tears rolling down our eyes, and other days it's like, babe, I'm running late. Let's do prayer in the car. Call me on the cell phone. Let's pray. But when we do that, our days are a lot better. And I'll tell you right now, my intimacy with my wife is off the flipping charts. And I didn't buy anything. I didn't get blue steel or any cream or anything like that. My marriage with my wife has never been stronger. My relationship with my children, because I'm praying with them and because I'm being very open and upfront with what's going on in our life and what's going on with my business. I mean, my 12-year-old and my 10-year-old know that my business has been struggling and that we may have to move and sell them a big house and all that great stuff. And again, I'm not trying to demotivate people, and I'm not saying everyone's going to have to go through this, but it has made my relationships much stronger, not only with my wife and my children. Then I've realized who my real friends are. I know now who are my marvelous comrades who are in the battle with me. I have a list of like 8 to 10 guys that we text each other when we're traveling or when a friend of mine, Bill Collins, he's in the energy business. He insulates chicken coops and dairy farms and cuts people's propane costs in half. Pretty nice business to be in these days. He's doing very, very well. And his supplier that he gave the formula to make this stuff has ripped him off and has gone into competition with him, and they're basically selling him at like 50% off. They're like just killing his business. And so he had this major meeting with all the attorneys and with these guys and everything, and we were praying for him. And he came out of that meeting, and these guys basically admitted, yeah, we stole your stuff, and we're sorry, and what can we do to work together? And that's the power of that, having that in your business, to know I'd rather have 10 friends who will stay in the foxhole with me and will fight it out to the bitter end than I would to have 200 friends who are going to run for a high ground as soon as things get a little sticky and a little rough. The Lord has brought to me all kinds of great people who are just going, man, this is great, like, who are encouragers. You know, I have my occasional people saying, well, don't you think you should go get a job? Have you thought about applying at McDonald's?
No, but you've been thinking about buying stock and making some money.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. Well, I always love these people that right now as we're recording this, gas is whatever, $4 a gallon, $5 a gallon, whatever the heck it is. I'm just like, y'all got this all wrong. If you want to feel better about the price of gas, go out and buy some Exxon stock. So, like, every time you start pumping gas, you realize that you're putting money back in your pocket. Who's happy about the high gas prices? The guy that owns 1 million shares of Exxon. He's telling all his friends, go buy a Hummer.
Tell us about this Christian entrepreneur membership site that you've got started, and what's that all about?
Well, basically what I've done is I've created a membership site for what I call renegade Christian entrepreneurs. Renegades are people that go against conventional wisdom. And if you're an entrepreneur and you're a Christian, you go against conventional wisdom because the church doesn't know what to do with you and the other entrepreneurs don't know what to do with you. So I figured we needed to create a community just for us. So what I did is I created a membership site, and I've also created an ebook called Why Is It Some Christian Entrepreneurs Profit and Others Don't? Well, it goes through a lot of the stuff that we were just talking about, if it goes into more depth and detail. And the whole point and purpose of this is to build a community of renegade Christian entrepreneurs that lift each other up. So, for example, Ben and I knew of each other, but we connected on Facebook. And then right after Ben and I talked, like, Ben connected me with 4 other Christian entrepreneurs. And there is such this hunger of a place where people want to connect. They want to get real answers to, is my copy too sleazy? How am I going to write copy without selling my soul to the devil? You know, I know I got to make sales, but how am I going to do this to bring glory to the Lord? So there's forums. We have prayer requests. You should see the prayer requests we get. I do an online Bible study on Wednesday mornings at 7 a.m. Eastern, which is like 4 o'clock Pacific. But we provide archives of that. We stick it on the membership site so that you can listen to the archive replays of those. There's all kinds of resources online that come with this membership site, and it's really specifically a place that people can get teachings, they can get all kinds of great information about what it means to be a Christian entrepreneur. So I'll give you an example of this. The teaching I did today was on being a Proverbs 2 entrepreneur, but I also related it to things that we face day in and day out in our business. Like some of the examples I was sharing today, but people always ask, how come I'm not having the blessing? Well, I go through an entire section of why you probably don't have a blessing. Well, one of the main reasons is if you look at Proverbs 2, it tells you first, store my commandments in your heart. Well, most people don't store those commandments in their heart. They think they're old school. I don't need to listen to them. God gave us those 10 for a reason, not just to throw them out. When Christ came, he redeemed the law, but that doesn't mean that we don't live by the law anymore. I mean, those things still need to be in our hearts. And so I take people through not only that, but all right, how can I not only do this, but how can I make money as a Christian entrepreneur? How do I approach debt? How do I approach doing a sales pitch from the front of the room? And I've got to drive people to the back of the room because I need them to buy stuff, because if they don't, I'm not going to be able to eat. So how do I go through and do I still make a presentation, and how do I write sales copy? How do I market? How do I do all these things in order for me to be able to be a successful business person? Because there's nothing the world would love to see more, and that is a broke Christian who can't make his business work. Because, see, they don't think it can work. And God never intended for business and faith to be separate. He intends them to be together. And so that's the whole point of the Renegade Christian Entrepreneur Membership.
For more information about running a Christ-centered business, or to learn more about Matt's Christian Renegade Entrepreneur Membership site, go to www.bensettle.com/kingdom. That's www.bensettle.com/kingdom. Thank you.